Well, they call it the longest day in golf, Dick. 36 holes, everyone going for an exemption into the U.S. Open. I guess that name, the longest day in golf, really does apply, doesn't it?
Well, yeah, I think obviously it's a play on words because we're into June and there's so much daylight. And they need the daylight because everyone has to play 36 holes. And this is keep in mind, this is the sectional qualifying. This is the second one. There's a local qualifying I think it's 18 holes, but it used to be 36.
Right. Yeah.
And then if you qualified, for the final sectional qualifying, which is another 36
right.
holes to determine. I think it's, this U.S. Open is the most democratic event there is. I think there's always about between 9,000 and 10,000 entries, and if you're good enough to play in it, you have a shot at the U.S. Open. I think it's lovely. I've always enjoyed it.
Yeah, well, I know you've played in a few sessionals, haven't you?
Yes, well, I've played in half a dozen U.S. Opens, and I've had to qualify half a dozen times when I
right.
even went the year when I won two tournaments on the PGA Tour. I still had to qualify, in the sectional qualifying for the U.S. Open, and they're always interesting, and really, what's key is how your attitude is, how you approach it, and obviously how you play.
Well, it's funny, you mentioned the numbers and how tough it is, even to get to sectionals. I guess in this day and age, when you got someone like the Vegas Golden Knights in the Stanley Cup final, I guess you don't call anyone really a long shot anymore, but really, most of them are. But if you look at a guy like, say, Corey Connors last year, boy, he went in and he shot 61, 67. So you have a good day and bam, you're into the U.S. Open.
Yeah, and that's just what I mean by the attitude, because there's a lot of players going for such few spots. So if you have the attitude of got nothing to lose and everything to gain, then when you play well, like Corey did last year, and then you find yourself in the U.S. Open, it's very inspirational. It's very invigorating. I remember, in my last year as amateur, 1981, we had just come off winning the NCAA at Stanford, BYU golf team, and then the week after, I was down in Seattle, and I won the local qualifying, which allowed me to get to the sectional qualifying 2 weeks later, and I'm still amateur, and I there was only one spot, and I lost in the sudden death playoff for that one. But the inspirational thing of being an amateur and qualifying to play in the U.S. Open was what I had hoped to do, and to this day I still remember that and wish I had done it. And playing in the 81 U.S. Open at Marion as an amateur would have been just a wonderful feather in my memory.
Yeah. So for someone like a Corey Connors, would that have been almost a turning point in his career to do as well as he did to get into the U.S. Open?
Absolutely. There's no doubt about it, because he qualified for it. He wasn't given a sponsor's exemption. He earned his way out there to be amongst the best players in the world, which in his mind at that time, in anyone's mind at that time, in a very important part of your step process to ascend to success, you then feel like you've accomplished a great deal. And it really doesn't matter, because most first-time U.S. Open qualifiers, like that, they shoot a high number and they miss the cut. They're just, they're just overwhelmed with how difficult U.S. Opens are.
Right.
But what it does to your belief system that you can do that—that's really the inflection point in your career, and it's one that you build upon. And Corey certainly did that. Has
sure.
done that.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, if you look at the other side of it, you mentioned the mind part of it. I'm sure there are a lot who, started right back at the beginning, like you say, for local qualifying, and they are 18 holes now. But still, I mean, you go in, it's been a long road to get where they are to sectionals, and that includes all the, all the work you've done on your game, not just, getting through local, but all the work you've done on your game. So it's been a long road just to get to this point. And to get to this point, I'm sure that in a lot of minds anyway, there's a lot of pressure to perform and not many exemptions available.
That's right. And like if you're just because you're in the top 125 on the PGA Tour, you're an exempt player on the PGA Tour, that qualifies you to skip the local qualifying and then right. You can go straight to the sectional qualifying.
Right.
So unless you're in the top 50 world ranking, you aren't exempt into the U.S. Open.
Right.
And you're right. Those things are very important, and they do a tremendous amount for having that deep sense of gratification that all the work you've done to this point, that it's giving you this progress, and you're getting traction. You're not spinning your wheels. You're getting somewhere. You're making progress,
yeah.
And that's the real gift that every one of these players look at. They have to make progress. If you feel like you're not making progress, or in fact, if you're moving backwards, that's when the golf world starts to cave in on you.
Right. And just, I mean, for a lot of them, just to get to this point, I mean, I'm looking at some of the amateurs from Canada that will be playing on Monday. I mean, just to get to this point is that progress that you mentioned.
That's right. And if you're in that mode of competition, you have to play in everything you can. So even a 18-hole qualifying with the USGA event, those are huge. And you go in them, you learn to play, and if you don't succeed, then you learn where your shortcomings are and you fill them up and you go at it again and you keep doing it until you make progress.
Right. Well, I know besides the actual competitive part of it, I mean, I know you've got some great stories from qualifying, including a caddy who apparently was enamored with the USGA.
Yeah, so this was the U.S. Open qualifying for 2001 U.S. Open at Southern Hills, and I've had one of my best friends always caddied for me at U.S. Opens. We just made a pact that if I'm in the U.S. Open, he's caddying for me. He didn't want to caddy in any PGA Tour events. He didn't want to caddy in the Masters. He just wants to caddy in the U.S. Open. my best friend's name is Russ Jordan.
Right.
But we're in Seattle and qualifying And we're, the Washington State Golf Association is conducting the event, and it's a 36-hole qualifying in Washington. And I hit my tee shot, the Washington State Golf Association official asks my caddy to put on this bib. And caddies typically are a little defiant to organizations. They don't like wearing bibs. It's hot enough and so forth.
Right.
And the bib on it said the USGA. My caddy, he knew that the situation, that the official he was going to give him a little bit of a hard time, and he said to him, "So you're asking me to wear this bib?" And the official goes, "Yes," automatically preparing to get into a bit of a confrontation. And my caddy said, because he's in love with the USGA so much, he says, "It would be not only an honor, but I would be extremely proud to wear the best logo in all of golf. Thank you very much."
Wow.
And he put the bib on, and we trotted down the first fairway. And I had a chuckle because I knew exactly what was happening, but he blindsided the official. He didn't know what was coming, because he certainly doesn't get positive reactions when it usually comes to the United States Golf Association. So it was a lovely day. I remember I won the spot in a sudden death playoff. It often ends in sudden death playoffs, and then just the jubilation of qualifying for the U.S. Open. It never ends. It doesn't matter if you're a 20-year veteran of the PGA Tour. Qualifying for it is very euphoric.
Yeah, I mean, you see a lot of guys. I mean, I see Steve Stricker, for example, is in sectional qualifying on Monday. So. Yeah, that'll just give you an idea of some of the guys some of the competition that is out there for sectional qualifying.
Yeah, and I think it costs $150. So
yeah.
They usually play on a great golf course. So to the person who can, like, Joe, amateur golfer who's a scratch player who can consider getting into it, he pays his $150.
Yeah,
you're going to go to a great golf course, probably, maybe Seattle Country Club, and you're going to play 36 holes. And you might get paired with a Steve Stricker. So, me, that's some of the best golf you can hope for. It's,
sure.
It's the value proposition for the player, even if they don't make it, is just tremendous. You get a great experience. You get 36 holes a day. You're in an environment that you're going to see tour players in. I just think it's a terrific competition.
What, for an amateur, what kind of an effect does that have? Are you intimidated, or are you just enjoying the experience?
Well, it depends on your attitude, but it's your trust in the environment. You're in the game, and you're feeling alive, and you're getting a taste of what the best golf courses, best golfers, do for a living. You know, the environment's vibrant, and the excitement of a conclusion in one day. You take it all in, and that's what you want to. It can help you learn in so many ways.
Right. How do they set up the course, Dick? Are they tough courses?
Well, I think they're not setting them up in long preparation for them, but they'll set the course up as tough a conditions as you can for a average, you know, country club,
right,
type of thing. So
yeah.
I think it's all equal to everybody, but I think it's just tremendous value, and I think it's such a wonderful experience for those people who are interested in competition golf.
Sure. Well, it's something that we'd all love to do. So I guess we'll see.
You can go out and watch if you're a spectator. Go out to these events and watch them compete, engage yourself in the full environment of this competition. It's just it's delightful.
Well, I guess people got a taste watching Tin Cup, didn't they?
They did, exactly. So you get guys out there that are Tin Cup. I mean, if you're a public course golfer,
sure,
and you're out there and you've earned your time and learned and got yourself down to say a scratch player, you know, you've grounded out pretty good.
Yeah.
And then to thrust yourself in that environment, boy, I mean, you know, there's no invitations. This is, you know, surely democratic,
yeah,
based on your physical ability to play golf. I love it.
Yeah, well, you've definitely earned your way there.
That's right.
You know, so on to where the rough is thick and the greens are slick, right?
Yeah, and you know, look at Schmaltz, who just this past week earned his way onto the U.S. Senior Open in a sudden death playoff, as an example. You know, my hat is off to him because he grounded out. He's fighting against other golfers who've spent their a good portion of their life to get down to a zero handicapper, and the fact that he beat them, my hat is off to him, and we're going to watch him play in the U.S. Open, U.S. Seniors Open. I think that's just another example that we're talking about.
Like I say, in this era of the Vegas Golden Knights, you don't count anyone out, right?
That's right. You never do. There's always hope. So you're telling me there's a chance. There's always that chance. That hope keeps everyone alive.
Well, there's a lot of hope going on Monday, so we'll see what happens out of that and leading into the U.S. Open. So thanks for your pearls of insight, as usual.
All right. It's always a pleasure being with you. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Dick.